Hello, and welcome to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. My name is Sarah.
And this is Kelly.
And this is episode 10 of season 1, titled Running Ghost.
We hope everybody had a nice holiday season.
Did you have a good Christmas and New Year, Kelly?
Yeah, it was fine.
You just had kidding. To spend it with me?
Yeah, unfortunately. No, it was good. It was nice to be on a break from school and be with our whole family, so yeah.
What was your favorite part of this Christmas?
My favorite part?
Yeah.
Probably just being able to be all together, because I think I realized that probably won't last for that much longer.
We're growing up, lassie.
What about you?
I liked that we watched a lot of... We basically watched all my favorite Christmas movies.
We watched so many movies. Mom asked me to watch a movie like 2 nights ago, and I was like, no, I'm movied out.
But yeah, pretty much all my favorite Christmas movies that I feel like are classics. And my friend Megan and I were having a discussion about what are the best classic Christmas movies, but we couldn't agree on, like, any one movie. And Megan made a good point of saying, like, actually, I think what makes a good Christmas movie is the nostalgia that goes with it. If you have memories of watching it growing up, that's going to be your favorite Christmas movie. And it might not have anything to do with how good of a movie it is. It just, you grew up watching it.
Right. Right.
Which I was like, that's really valid. But I want to tell you why mine are better. But she grew up with two brothers close in age, so they just watched Home Alone and The Christmas Story.
Which
we watched neither of those.
Right.
And 2020 ended.
Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
Do you know what I said to Mom? I don't think you were here at dinner. I was like, we should have a funeral for 2020. And Mom was like, yeah, good riddance. And I was like, Mom, that's mean. And she was like, you said have a funeral. And I was like, yeah funerals, you say nice things about, you only remember the nice things. And she
that's
goes,
true.
She goes, well, good riddance. And I was like, gee, what are you going to say at my funeral? And she was like, exactly.
No, that's true. Like, the day on the 31st, I wrote down a list of every single, like, every month and, like, everything that happened. And just, I had to think of some positive things because I was feeling, kind of negative. So,
yeah. I did a blog like that, too, where I wrote out everything. And I also did a, you know how Oprah, back in the day, did, like, her favorite things and people would, like, go and get a lot of free stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
I did that on my blog, and I did, like, my favorite things of 2020. It's not necessarily stuff that came out this year, but it's stuff that made me happy this year. And I felt like it was good for me.
Shameless plug for Sarah's blog. For those that want to read her blog, check it out. It's on our website.
I thought you were going to say, like, shameless plug. Did I put that one of my favorite podcasts of 2020 was Not a Lady? Yes, I did. So I shamelessly plugged our podcast on my blog.
No, if you didn't, I would have judged you. So that's good.
Well, let's talk about lessons from the last episode, which was A Cowboy's Lullaby.
Which I just wanted to say real quick, I know we've gotten a lot of new listeners over the holidays. If you don't remember, we do this before we start the episode. We just offer it out to any of our listeners to offer up lessons that they think characters learned, that they learned in the last episode. It can be serious, it can be funny, it can be ridiculous. We just want to hear your thoughts. So don't forget about that. You can always write us, tag us on social media. Really, you can write us anywhere. And we would love to feature your thoughts and lessons. So that's what we do at the beginning of this episode. And go ahead, Sarah.
The first lesson that I'm going to read is from the Instagram account Gilmore Forever. They wrote, a lesson in this is what Sully said to Red about giving up his baby. When we have lost something, we realize how precious it was, and we learn that even with all the difficulties, we should be grateful for what we have and fight for it, no matter the sacrifice.
Our good friend Brittany Anderson, shout out to Brittany, she says, I think Michaela learned that sometimes good people make bad decisions. I think at the heart of it, Red was a good person, just making some bad choices. Sometimes second chances are needed. And I agree. I think that, like, in this show, that there's a lot of people that are, they're not bad people, they just make bad decisions, and we do see that a couple times.
And I think we could argue sometimes our characters who we chronicle as good people make bad decisions. This episode maybe being a good example of that.
No, that's true. We also had our faithful listener, Lisa Farber King, say that she really enjoyed the song in this episode, which I agree. I really like the song. Should I record it and put it on SoundCloud? Let me know, guys.
I vote yes. You should. You should.
Anyway, let's jump in here, you guys.
Season 1, Episode 10, titled Running Ghost, aired on the 27th of February, 1993. It was directed by James Keach, who we have talked about once before. This is his second of 26 episodes that he will direct. The last one that we talked about would have been Law of the Land. And the writers for this episode are two one-time writers. It is Ed Burnham and Elaine Newman. And what I found was super fascinating is they are a duo of writers. Like, they have written multiple shows, but they always write together. So they actually did an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air together. And they also wrote episodes of, is it Michael Landon's Highway to Heaven?
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, they wrote three episodes of that show together, too. So I thought that was kind of cool. They're a writing partnership.
Yeah.
Now you can go ahead and start with scene one.
Scene one. We find ourselves in a field somewhere on the land in Colorado Springs. Cloud Dancing is teaching Dr. Mike about the differences between herbs and how they can be used and how particularly the Cheyenne use them when it comes to medicinal purposes. He talks about, oh, I'm going to butcher this, papivojo.
Sounded good to me.
Which we know as chamomile. I think most people are familiar with chamomile mostly because they dry out. Oh, she's drinking. Wow. I wish they could see you. Sarah's drinking chamomile tea right now.
As we speak.
I think you did that on purpose. You definitely did that on purpose.
No, I didn't.
She's like, I'm trying to be relevant.
No, little known behind the scenes fact of Not a Lady, I drink tea every time we're recording an episode.
Yes, Sarah is a big tea snob.
Snob?
Just kidding. She likes tea. But yeah, people are familiar because of chamomile tea, right? You dry out the flowers. They're kind of daisy-looking flowers, and you can steep them in water. And I think the reason people like chamomile is because there's no major side effects with it, but also it has a lot of anti-anxiety properties, calming properties. And I like, Cloud Dancing has a comment here. He says, the earth will give us everything we need. Which is obviously the Cheyenne's take on that, but I think it's a nice view.
Well, it's an appreciation of the world around us, not feeling like we have to create everything or that man has the answer to everything, but instead looking at what God has already provided us with.
Right. Which, I mean, I do support, and I'm in PA school, and a lot of stuff we learn is what we as man can do, what pharmacology can do, but I do think there are a lot of ways that we've been given things, and it's just finding the right way to use them. But we are quickly interrupted by our chamomile thoughts by gunshots. And the family goes over and sees that there are men killing buffalo.
Just one guy.
Yeah. At this point, it's just one guy. I think is it Sully? Basically, he explains that these guys have been hired by the railroad, and they're claiming that it's to feed the workers, but really they know that if they can get rid of the buffalo, they can get rid of the Cheyenne, which is what they want.
Yeah, so this was really interesting for me to read about. Shooting buffalo as a part of the initiative for the Transcontinental Railroad is historically accurate. In 1862, Abraham Lincoln actually signed what was titled the Pacific Railway Act of 1862, and it was an initiative for the Transcontinental Railroad to bring together the East and the West states. It was progress, right? And it was meant to be beneficial for the country of America as a whole, for the transporting of goods and people, which in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. However, and this will come up later, some of the side effects or smaller initiatives or smaller projects that made the Transcontinental Railroad possible was eliminating anything that stood in the way of that building, which unfortunately Native Americans and the wildlife that the tribes lived their life off of were at the forefront of the casualties of that quote-unquote progress. There's lots of historical documents that talk about how the Cheyenne especially were very careful when it came to hunting the buffalo in that they use everything, right?
Right.
Bones, body parts, skin, everything was used. And from the very beginning, white man with guns killed for sport. And they advertised to anyone, really, the railroad advertised for men to go out west and do what was called hunting by rail. And there were two sides. They would sometimes send hunters out to, like, go and kill buffalo and coyote and other what they considered, you know, pests. And there was everything from, like, when the railroad was there, they would put guys in the train and let them shoot off the sides of the train any bison they saw or passed. And then also went as far as, like, hiring people to ride out ahead of the railroad and kill buffalo population. And yes, a big part of that was just for sport. They would shoot them and leave them. The most vivid scene that I've ever seen this is the Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves.
I was thinking of that.
Yeah, which is our mom's, like, favorite movie. But yeah, that scene, even watching Dr. Quinn where you see the buffalo falling, like, I don't even want to know how they got those images, but, like, I don't like animals dying, despite what people might believe based on last episode when I was arguing for the death of the bear. It was only because he was rabid, yeah. Not because I ever want animals to die. But anyway, interestingly enough, though, as I was reading about these men who were hired to kill the bison, one of the most famous bison hunters was William Cody, who you would know better as Buffalo Bill. Buffalo Bill was actually hired by the Transcontinental Railroad to hunt bison.
Hmm.
So he was, well, I don't want to say he was, what's that guy, Rankin Tate? I don't want to say that he was
like that
in his treatment of men, but he was hired to do the same job that Tate was hired to do, which surprised me because he later would become known for being someone who brought the Old West to the world, more or less.
Right.
So then we get the intro with no narration, and then we get a really gross scene where Dr. Mike is cutting.
What do you mean gross? How is it gross?
That finger looks disgusting, man.
Wow. If that's what you can consider gross, then what did you think when Lauren was getting his gut scooped out?
They didn't show anything.
Unfortunately, they didn't. No, yeah, she's just making a small incision to drain his blister, which this is a lot of people, like, I think you will know that, like, you've been heard that you shouldn't pop blisters, which is true. It's usually good to let them heal. That fluid's there for a reason. But sometimes, depending on the size and the pressure of a blister, it actually can, I mean, to reduce discomfort, especially for someone like him where, you know, he's going to have to use that finger again, like for the telegrams he's sending, like, it actually is better to just small incision, drain the fluid. But it's kind of funny because she basically tells him not to look and he still looks, which I think is really funny. And you would not believe the amount of patients that do that where they're like, I don't want to see, I don't want to look. And then they're like fixated on what you're doing, which is also stressful.
I never look.
I don't either, actually. I don't like things being done to me, but I mean, I will look sometimes.
When I give blood, I don't even look at my arm.
Yeah. Which is why
I don't know how I would react.
Yeah, and they do it on purpose. Even when I do go and I do look, they cover it up with a piece of gauze because they know people don't like to look at a massive needle going into your arm. Anyway, Horace, you know, explains that he's been sending a lot of telegrams for the railroad because there's a lot of talk of the railroad coming to run through the town. And he tells her, you know, this, yeah, it's going to happen. There's a guy here, basically.
As they come out of the clinic, that's when we see Thaddeus Birch, attorney at law, played by actor Andrew, I don't know if it's Prin or Prine, but when I looked at his resume, his acting resume, he starred in over 30 films and guest starred in over 79 different TV shows. And we should note he is a man with a significant mustache. I feel like we have to point that out now.
Why? Because we messed up the Tom Selleck thing?
No, not because we messed it up, but because we've made it a point to talk about mustaches.
Well, yes. But my favorite part of this conversation is he's like, you know, Dr. Mike introduces herself and then he's like, oh, I had a woman doctor take out my lumbago.
Yes, and I remembered Robert E. in the pilot, lumbago. We had a conversation and you were like, I think it was like part of a lower back.
Yeah.
Like
all, yeah, lumbago, all it is, it's saying that you have pain in the muscles or the joints of your lower back, right? So when he says she took out my lumbago, and it's so funny because Dr. Quinn's like, took it right out, did she? Like,
the whole
thing? Like, you know, you're an idiot is basically what she's thinking.
You're a liar.
Yeah, but I thought that was really funny because I was like,
You'd be proud of me, Kelly. Dr. Quinn has taught me things because I did notice that and I was like, lumbago, isn't that like your back?
Yeah, quite funny.
Thaddeus Birch claims to work for the Continental Republic Railroad, which this will become significant later, but if you noticed historically earlier, I talked about the Transcontinental Railroad. So please note, he is not talking about the railroad that Abraham Lincoln signed the act on, which obviously is what gives him away in the end. But he says he's working for the Continental Republic Railroad, which I looked up and it doesn't exist as it shouldn't because he made it up. Spoilers for the end of the episode, but hopefully you've watched it already. But he tells her it's her lucky day because she's going to get the opportunity to sell her clinic and make room for all the fancy people that are going to start coming to Colorado Springs because they have a railroad that for some reason has to go literally through every major building in town. It seems more work to me to bulldoze half the buildings than to just pull up right outside the town. Yes. And they didn't even have bulldozers, so.
Thank you for pointing that out. I was a little worried for a second.
But like, you know, like nowadays people just bulldoze things. It's like, oh yeah, just like to dismantle all those buildings, that's a lot of stinking work.
But he's talking it up, right? There's a group that's formed. He's talking it up, making it sound really good, embellishing whatever he may. So we get the impression that he's one of those salesman type, you know, where he just has that kind of...
Gives us some Doc Eli vibes, for sure. And it's not least because of the
don't
mustache.
Say vibes. I don't like vibes.
Vibes? Why don't you like vibes?
I don't know. I just don't like that word.
Vibin?
Yeah, it makes you sound young.
Okay. I didn't know that was a bad thing.
I'm not calling you old. I'm just... Anyway.
He does make it sound really good, but I should say the Transcontinental Railroad, which was started being built prior to the Civil War in 1863 and was finished around 1869, it is marked as the greatest technological feat of that era. Back in the day, they could get you from Omaha to San Francisco in 1 week, which... Wow. Back then, that is killer amount of time when you think about the people on the Oregon Trail, you know, and how many months it took them to get out west. So,
right.
We end that scene with her not necessarily looking angry, but definitely looking
skeptical.
Yeah, cautious about what this means.
We're on the reservation. We have Black Kettle and Iron Knife, who's not a character we particularly know before, but he's given a name. So Iron Knife and Black Kettle are having an argument and Sully's there, Cloud Dancing is there, and you know, Sully says like I've never really seen anyone talk to Black Kettle like that. But what they're discussing is the Buffalo Hunter, because at this point obviously the Cheyenne are concerned because they're losing their main food source. And so Sully offers to go talk to the Buffalo Hunter. He won't let Cloud Dancing come. He wants to go talk to him himself. Which, I mean, what kind of input? Do you have any input on this
I feel like we talked about all the treaties that the white man went back on that really cut down on the land that they had originally promised to the Native Americans. We've talked about Black Kettle and kind of his experience after the Sand Creek Massacre. They were put on a reservation. Food was scarce. They're not allowed to leave the reservation in groups bigger than like one or two. But then it gets to the point where they're not allowed to leave at all, which we see in this episode. I should say this is actually Black Kettle's third appearance in Dr. Quinn. And we haven't talked about the actor who plays him. His name is Nick Ramis. I think it's important to note that they say the reason that Iron Knife is angry is because his son starved to death last winter, I think they said, which that would be about the time after the Sand Creek Massacre happened. They had the winter. That's when the Cheyenne were put on the reservation. And I think it's significant because in the very last episode, the whole reason that Black Kettle wouldn't take care of baby Mike, Red McCall's baby, was because their people were starving. And so already knowing that the Cheyenne are hard pressed for food, and it's not from necessarily a lack of buffalo at that time. Like at that time, it was because they can only hunt on the reservation. Now, the very buffalo that they have on the reservation are being eliminated for sport. And Iron Knife seeing that, knowing his little boy starved to death, and now we're already they're looking at the next winter and what this means for them.
He wants to do something about it, for sure.
Yeah. And I do have a random little fact to throw in here, but I was doing some reading about Black Kettle. Did you know that Black Kettle's wife's name was Medicine Woman?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was reading about Black Kettle. They were married in 1855. Black Kettle's wife's native name, obviously the name is actually in Cheyenne, but I'm not going to try and pronounce it. However, on our website in the resources and research tabs, I've actually linked a website that talks about more about her. But it blew my mind when I realized the significance of him giving Dr. Mike the Cheyenne name of Medicine Woman is actually very significant because that was the name of his own wife.
That's really interesting. Not only does Sully say that he's going to go talk to the buffalo hunter, I think Sully sees himself as a good mediator for that conversation between white man and the Cheyenne. But since he tells Cloud Dancing he shouldn't come, Cloud Dancing actually says that he will ask the ghost buffalo to protect Sully and the herd. And this will obviously come to be important later in the episode.
At the mercantile, Mr. Birch is convincing Lauren to sell his building and land to the railroad. They have a conversation about change. We see Lauren be a little sentimental.
Yeah.
We learn that he and Maude moved there from Missouri, Missouri was the 24th state in the United States.
Shout out to all our Missouri fans. Let us know where you're at.
You have a grumpy old man on your side.
No, but he's sweet here, actually. I think it's sweet, all the things he says about holding memories. But I guess everybody has their selling price, because Birch is like, change is inevitable, no matter what, the railroad's going to come, and shouldn't you make a profit? And we kind of end the scene with Lauren being like, how much did you say again?
Yeah.
There is a quick scene where, unfortunately, we see Iron Knife riding into the buffalo, what are they called?
Buffalo hunters. I called it a railroaders camp.
Okay. Yeah. So their camp that they have, Iron Knife is riding in with intent to hurt, kill. Unfortunately, the buffalo hunter, who we haven't learned his name yet. We'll learn it in a second, but he shoots Iron Knife and kills him.
I kind of hate how he just rides up there knowing they have guns. Because obviously he knows they have guns because he's seen them shoot the buffalo.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, in the scene, Sully makes the comment of, like, somebody should go get him, because he's in this state of, like, anger, distress, despair. He's kind of probably, like we said, make a choice that's not the best. So, Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
I think maybe in this moment for Iron Knife, it's not even about the buffalo, but it's more on like who he can't strike out at the American government. He can't strike out at the soldiers, you know, because that's going to bring down trouble on, you know, his entire tribe. And so I think this is almost a desperate attempt of looking for someone to exact revenge on that maybe won't matter.
Right.
But unfortunately, it does cost him his life.
In the meantime, Birch is making the rounds and he's at the saloon.
Stroking Hank's ego.
Yeah, having no problem making a deal with Hank. Hank's not, his motivations are not always in the right place, so money happens to be one of the places it is found.
And he enlists him as a partner to convince the others.
Right, which, I forgot about that.
To be fair, I think it's a brilliant strategy, right? Because Dr. Mike is a prime example of how the people of Colorado Springs are not convinced by outsiders, you know? Like, they didn't want to listen to her, especially, like, in the beginning. So he's like, they're not really listening to me, you know? I bet they'll listen to one of their own. And, of course, he picks a guy who, like you said, has questionable morals and therefore is gonna do whatever he takes to get his cut.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
At the railroaders camp, Sully arrives with his paint. He got his horse back, by the way.
How do you notice these things?
I notice all the horses. And actually, I feel like Sully's super respectful in the beginning because he's like,
no, he is.
I know you have a job to do. Like, not even being like, you shouldn't choose the buffalo. This is their way of life. He says, I know that you're here to kill the buffalo, and that is what you have to do. He says, Chief Black Kettle asked me to come to petition you to leave enough buffalo for the tribes to survive through the winter. Which
was also surprising for listeners, because I think you're expecting him to be like, this is wrong, stop.
I think what stood out to me, though, is when he said, Chief Black Kettle asked me, because Black Kettle actually didn't ask him. He volunteered to go.
Right.
So I wondered if that was, like, did he see himself as, like, Black Kettle didn't ask, but if anyone's going to do it, it's got to be me. Or was it to make very clear, like, my position, like, I'm not just some white guy showing up being like, hey, listen to me talk about the natives, but actually being like, I have a relationship with the chief.
Right.
And I love the line, what's progress to some means death to others, because that's Tate Rankin is the name of the buffalo hunter, played by Don Stroud.
No, I was just going to say, it's like the most unlikable character I think we've had so far.
Yeah. Well, his last name is Rankin. Like, stanky.
Oh.
Rank?
Yeah. I was thinking more of like...
Oh, like ranking? Like
class ranking.
No, like rank. Like, ooh, what's that smell, you stinky man?
Oh my gosh. You're weird. Okay.
Words, English teacher. Okay. Anyways, hey, naming your characters is important, man. However, I just want to point out the conversation that Sully and Tate have where they talk about progress is actually, it seems like it's pulled out of some historical letters that I did some research on. General William Sherman wrote to General Ulysses S. Grant prior to his becoming our president, and he was part of the, obviously, the U.S. military, especially in regards to progress in the West. And one of the things that Sherman wrote in a letter to Grant was, we are not going to let thieving, ragged Indians check and stop the progress. And he went on in that letter to talk about the only solution would be their extermination. That is direct quote. And then later, General Philip Henry Sheridan, who you might or may not know, was actually the superior officer to one General Custer, wrote an entire letter about how they needed to be on the offensive to protect the railroad, and that the way to do that was to destroy food, shelter, and livestock possessed by the natives. So, white people are the worst. And it's just interesting to have Sully stand there and be that advocate and recognize, like, what's progress to some means death to others. And that statement is literally pulled from, you know, direct historical...
Interesting.
Objections.
Hmm.
So then, obviously, the conversation doesn't go so well. Sully threatens, and then they beat him up while his back is turned.
Literally beat him up, dump his body down a hill with Iron Knife, who's dead. I agree that it starts really respectfully and well, and then it turns into this just, yeah, kind of like a threat from each almost, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, Black Kettle may not be able to stop war if you keep killing the buffalo. Like, I'm not going to say what's going to happen, but yeah, it's, I don't like it. I don't like watching him get beat up. It might not be the most, like, believable. It's kind of believable. It might not be the most believable, but...
We've been watching Cobra Kai, so in comparison to Cobra Kai, it's believable that he survived, but yeah, it's, I mean, just, I hate that he does, they, like, wait till he turns around, and then he, yeah, like, butts him in, yeah, the head with the gun, and yeah, it's like 3-on-1 or whatever, too.
Right, no, exactly, exactly. So, back at the homestead, we're setting the table for dinner, and Colleen gets mad at her brother. We wouldn't know anything about that in our family. As I'm sure you wouldn't in yours.
And exerts violence.
Yeah, so Brian has used Colleen's hairbrush given to her by Dr. Mike's mother, and he's using it to brush Wolf. What's wrong with that? His wolf. You know, Sully told him to brush him. He's just doing what he's supposed to do, but yeah, she hits him. And while Dr. Mike, I don't really know why they put this in here. I'm not really sure, other than to, like, just have some sort of conflict.
Show her distracting them. Mothering. I don't know. Maybe. That's a good question. I mean, to be honest, I think it's a very, like you said, it's very realistic. Like, even all the reasons, like, Brian takes Sully's word for everything. So Sully told me to brush my wolf. I don't have a brush. Colleen got this beautiful brush that's made for brushing. I should use that for my grandma. And then the freak out that Colleen has, we know is really accurate because we saw how Mrs. Quinn, at first she didn't even want Colleen to touch it, you know? So I feel like, right, it all works. Yeah. And even Matthew's like, you were doing what? Like, are you crazy? You were brushing, yeah, the wolf with a, you know, a family heirloom.
Right.
But I also like Dr. Mike's like, no hitting, apologize. And I'm like, there's every mother.
Yeah. But before anything can really happen, there's a knock on the door, and it is Cloud Dancing. Sully didn't come back, so Cloud Dancing goes to find him and brings him back, and he says that Sully spoke Dr. Mike's name, which is nice. And so it's probably the next day, and, well, just to mention, Sully looks bad. Sully looks really bad.
He does look bad.
And you know, for me to say that Jolanda looks bad, you know it has to be true, because the man, it's hard to make him look bad. But so probably the next day, they've cleaned Sully up a bit. His face looks like it's been cleaned a bit.
They do a good job. I like how they make his one eye look like it's, like, swollen shut.
Shut.
Like,
yeah, and he has a lot of facial swelling.
Props to the makeup department.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good for the 90s. And even Cloud Dancing says, you know, that the spirits say it's bad. And it is bad. And
they talk about, like, his internal versus external injuries. Which at first I thought that meant, like, internal bleeding. But I realized...
No, it does.
Well, maybe it does. But I think it also has to do with, like, the trauma. Like, he's not going to recover quickly from the emotions, right, of the experience.
Yeah, right. Which sometimes I think a lot about, like, if I was practicing medicine during this time, I just don't know how they knew anything. Because, yeah, she can see what's on the outside, but he could be, like, internally bleeding out. I mean, there are signs that you can see, but, like, I don't know, without, like, imaging and all the things we can do today, I can't imagine trying to, like, figure anything out then. I mean, here's the reality. You have Sully's our patient, right? We know that he's had some sort of loss of consciousness because he was, I mean, well, we saw it personally, but we know that because he was down in the ditch, you know, not been able to get up by himself. Anytime someone loses consciousness, it's very serious, right? Because the reason that happens is usually there's some sort of trauma that forces your brain, which is very important, very tender,
And there's actually fluid separating the brain from the skull to protect it. Well, in trauma, especially in this case, we saw Sully get beat up. That hits the skull, which can cause an overwhelming number of, like, your neurotransmitters to fire at the same time. And that's, like, an overload for the brain. So what does it do? It kind of causes, like, a system crash, if you will, which is why you lose consciousness. So we then see the next day, again, you know, Sully is actually waking up this time because before he's, you know, unconscious still. The longer time that you're unconscious, that could be more and more damage to the brain, right? Your brain stem, you could have a skull fracture. His brain could be swelling. When your brain is swelling, you can have hemorrhage, you can have a hematoma, all these really bad things, right? So there is a lot of concern for Sully at this point. And so Dr. Mike says she wants to examine him now that he's awake. She does some brief examinations just to see where he's in pain and such. And we find out very quickly that he cannot feel or move his legs, which, just to say personally, I feel like that was probably really terrifying for him to, like, actually look up and realize that she was touching him and that he couldn't feel it. Do you have any theories about why this would happen?
I mean, damage to his spinal cord, right?
Right. So, like we said, I mean, I just listed, like, a ton of things that could happen to the brain. Well, the brain, we know, controls everything in your body, including sensation, including movement. It actually has specific tracks and pathways from the brain to whatever, you know, receptor sites, wherever you're talking about in the body, that are very important. One is in charge of sensation, another is charge of movement. So, with a traumatic brain injury that we're kind of, I'm guessing, is probably what has occurred, which could be anything. The brain could be bruised, it could be torn, penetrated. And especially with repeated blows, right? Sorry, I'm trying not to drag this on. I just find it very interesting. But again, yes, it can affect your nerves, which could lead to some sort of paralysis. Dr. Mike explains it could be temporary, because let's say you have some swelling on the brain or even swelling on the spinal cord that's compressing a nerve that affects the sensation or affects the movement. Well, if there's swelling, eventually the swelling will go down. And as the swelling goes down, your brain will be able to access those pathways again, which is good. But we don't know if that's the case with Sully or not. It could be temporary, or it could be something very serious occurred. And now it's not just an accumulation of fluids on the spinal cord, it's damage. Cloud Dancing says that he knows that there's a route that you can make into a salve. And so he's determined to go do that, even though Sully says something like, you've never even seen it. But Cloud Dancing wants to be able to do something. And as much as Dr. Mike encourages Sully, saying, like, you know, it could be temporary, doesn't mean it's forever.
It takes time to heal.
Yeah, it takes time. We kind of see her later, like, at the end of the scene. She's kind of, like, silently crying and looking very unsure, which I think is probably extremely accurate, because she knows that there's damage, but we don't know what type of damage, we don't know where the damage is, and we don't know how severe the damage is. So, like I said, I can't imagine trying to figure that out without being able to, like, see anything.
Yeah, for real. I do really like how, and we're gonna see this more later, but, like, I think the Cooper children are so wonderful to Sully in this whole episode, and even in that moment, they're, like, all three of them are crowded around him when she, mm-hmm. which gives her that little moment to be like, I can't be emotional about this because
right.
he needs me and they need me to, like, be okay and keep going and, you know,
yeah.
all that kind of thing. Mr. Birch is still working his sales pitch, and now he is in the barber shop and he's got Jake on board, and he offers Jake a very surprise secret special that, instead of getting money for the deed that he is turning over, he can trade it for stock, an interest in the new railroad, in which 5 shares for every dollar, and he'll become super rich. But he's only offering it to him, and so Jake agrees.
Jake's like, ooh, I'm special.
Yeah. At the homestead, I really love this scene because Colleen
I know.
Wants Sully to eat his soup, and Sully doesn't want to eat, and Brian goes, I have the solution, just have a cookie. And then Colleen's like, he needs something nourishing, and Brian goes, okay.
Okay.
First eat your soup, then you can have the cookie, and it's freaking cute.
Yeah, very cute. Sorry, Mom, talking about Brian being cute again, but he's cute, okay?
And then here, Brian asks Sully to tell a story, and we get the first introduction of the white buffalo. First of all, Sully makes mention that white buffalo are super rare, and according to the National Bison Association, 1 in 10 million buffalo are born white. So that is not an exaggeration. And the white buffalo slash running ghost is a Lakota Sioux Nation myth slash legend slash creation story. And it's like a 2,000-year-old story, and I have attached original versions or write-ups on the actual story, but I'm just going to shorten it down to the symbolism of this white buffalo is that the white buffalo taught the people how to pray. They had forgotten how to communicate with God, with the Creator, and the buffalo came to them and taught them how to pray. And the buffalo is the one who introduced them to the prayer pipe. And really, there's a lot more to the story where the buffalo actually changes colors, and the colors of the buffalo represent the different races and the four directions. But really, the heart of the story is really that the white buffalo is a sign that people's prayers are being heard. And I think we don't really get the backstory. Right. We get, you know, Cloud Dancing's experience with the white buffalo, but I think it's cool to know the myth behind it and understanding that the white buffalo is a representation of prayers being heard, prayers being answered, kind of really helps us understand some other scenes that we'll talk about when we get to them.
Dr. Mike and Matthew come in, and similarly to what we've talked about, you know, not too long ago, Dr. Mike's trying to reassure Sully that injuries take time, and she doesn't know if he's going to heal. He asked for her honesty, like, tell me how it is. Do you know if I'm going to heal? You know, she doesn't. She doesn't know, and Sully gets upset, and that's very normal for a patient. Things you don't know that people study about medical school is patient reactions to things, and that's very normal for him to get upset about the fact that she doesn't know if he will heal. She doesn't know what's going to happen. But she says, okay, there are things we can do. Well, she kind of talks about, like, stimulating blood flow and continuing to help your muscles. So she starts to pull up his little nightgown and massage his legs, which is true. And you'll see this many times with even, like, comatose patients or elderly patients, is that this is why they do range of motion and physical therapy and all these activities, because if your muscles aren't working, they're not going to get any sort of activity or growth or stimulation, which will cause them to atrophy and shrink. But Sully doesn't want to, and then he's like, don't go feeling sorry for me. And she's like, okay, I won't if you stop feeling sorry for yourself, which I think it shows that she knows him, because, like, that is what he's feeling. Yeah. You know, that's what he's feeling. He's upset. He's feeling sorry for himself. It's a good scene. I think she, like, knows how to handle him well, which is, like, I'm just saying, everybody would respond differently to this. And let's be honest, like, if Dr. Mike wasn't there, what would have happened to him? I mean, the Cheyenne probably would have took him in and tried to help him, but they only know so much, right? They can only do so much. So he really, I'm not saying he owes Dr. Mike a lot. I mean, he does, but I think he's also, we'll see later on. I know he's grateful, but I think it's probably an embarrassing situation to be in as well, because he's having to be vulnerable and nobody wants to anyone to see them, especially someone they like, whether he likes her or not, you know, at their worst state. So
after some time, we assume some time has gone by, Dr. Mike is outside feeding chickens, and Cloud Dancing arrives with the root, which I noticed we never actually get the name of this root, but we learn that Rankin has killed two more Cheyenne, which I wish I had more context who it was and why. Like, did they go to the camp too? Were Probably. They looking for Iron Knife? And how is this guy getting away with
murdering
three murders and one attempted murder, right? Which also, I guess maybe they didn't throw them down the same ditch, or maybe when Cloud Dancing went to get Sully, they also took Iron Knife's body back to the reservation. But I was like, wouldn't they, like, notice that Sully's body was missing?
Probably don't care. But this I do like. There's, like, a montage type thing here working through Sully's healing, and we see them in the hot spring, and Brian and Colleen being super sweet and cute.
They're so encouraging. Matthew's, and he's like, you're doing great, Sully. You're doing great. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Can they take care of me?
Yeah, they're so nice to him.
Wow. And again, yeah, Matthew and Mike are in the hot spring kind of turning him around. And
there are hot springs in Colorado Springs.
Yes, there are. There are hot springs in Colorado. And hot springs are believed to be to do a lot of things for your skin, for relaxation, but it also boosts hydrostatic pressure, which, for those that don't know, hydrostatic pressure is when your body induces the flow of blood through your veins. And so that's obviously very good in this sense because he's not able to move anything, so increasing blood flow is great. And also, hot springs are known to block pain receptors, so that could be helpful in this case as he's healing. He's still very sore. We also see him at the homestead doing pull-ups from the bed, which is really good. And
and the reverend's there and is like, do one more for the Lord, Sully. And then he does it and goes, amen.
I know. I thought that was really funny. Also, though, because, like, Sully's, well, like, Joe Lando, he's, like, trying to hold, like, the nightgown, like, down so he's not, like, flashing anybody, but he's also, like, doing pull-ups in front of the whole family, like, it's show.
I didn't notice that. I thought it was nice that the reverends come to visit him.
Yeah, of course, definitely. I mean, we haven't seen anybody else really care about the fact that he almost died.
Which I always say that Dr. Quinn, this show just doesn't do a good job of showing us time passing. Because honestly, I probably would have been convinced that that was the next day or something. But Dr. Mike goes, that's so much better than 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, wait, what? It's been 2 weeks.
Which is why I figured out that it was this like montage of like Sully healing because we didn't want to show that much time passing. Yeah.
Right.
Because next thing you know, they're putting the salve on his legs. Matthew is helping.
Well, I think that's good because earlier it seemed like Sully felt awkward about her doing it. And so I like that Dr. Mike doesn't shy the kids away from any of her, what she's doing, you know, like they're there through the whole process. And even when Sully looks really bad, it would be so easy to be like, Colleen, Brian, go to the barn, you know, but instead they're like involved. And so then, Matthew do it and like just serving Sully in that way, who I think we had a conversation in Father's Day of like, is Sully a father figure to the Coopers? I think this episode is kind of showing, like, in a way, like, yeah, they really care about him.
Of course, yeah, they do. They do. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, his toe moved, which is great. His toe moves. Sure enough, she gets him to really concentrate, which his toe moves. And then, like, Sully's like, yeah, this is great because I got things to do. And he's got this, like, sinister, like, serious look. And you're like, what does that even mean? Like, but we know what it means.
I will note, actually, that the montage, I really like the music for this. I'm a film soundtrack junkie. If you would look in my, what I listen to, it's basically all film scores. And I think this is the first time in the show that the score has really stuck out to me. During the montage, I thought the piano music that they played, I really liked it.
Nice. Didn't notice that.
And we assume some more time has passed as the montage is seemingly coming to an end where Matthew and Dr. Mike are helping Sully walk outside onto the porch and down the stairs. And he's very insistent on trying to do it on his own, which Dr. Mike tells him he's not ready. And he tries to use a crutch and he falls. And you can tell that he's frustrated with himself. Yeah. But Dr. Mike and Matthew share a look and they're both like, you're doing great. You've come so far. It's going to be okay. You'll get there. You just need more time. Your body needs more time to heal.
Which I'm sure any physical therapist or occupational therapist knows this frustration well, because it's difficult and these things do take time. The body, especially as you get older, cannot just bounce back and replenish itself like it could or should be able to. So, yeah. And knowing Sully, how active and how capable he is, it's a difficult thing for him.
Yeah.
We're at Robert E's now, and Hank comes over to fulfill his promise of making sure that everyone sells in town. It turns out that Robert E. and Grace aren't selling to the railroad, respectively. They're places of business. And Robert E. mentions that Birch promised him that he would be offered a fair price for a Negro. And that's something that's stuck with them because Grace brings up, if you're going to come to my cafe and pay the same amount for when whatever food you order, then I should be paid the same amount for my land. Hank, so graciously and kindly, in an understanding way, is like, you should take what you can get, okay? Because it's coming and it doesn't matter. And I really like this analogy that Robert E. then has this, you know, horseshoe. And he's like, when you get hot, Hank, you get weak. And you, when you get weak, you break.
Well, which he says in response to Hank being like, if you don't move, you're going to get bowled over, right? Which is a threat. And yeah, and then Robert E.'s, it's such a polite way of saying, like, I'd like to see you try. You hang around in a bar all day, and I beat metal and deal with horses. Yeah. Who's going to win in the fight?
Yeah.
I feel like this is such a, like, really, really big conversation, and this is the only time we're really going to talk about it, you know?
In this episode, you mean?
Yeah.
It is kind of, like, glanced over. It could be, like, its own hour and a half conversation, probably.
And obviously, I know why they didn't do that, because this is the secondary storyline, but this is a big deal. Like, he said, oh, you'll get paid what's fair for you as a non-white person, you know, like, and especially considering if we're assuming, well, I don't know where this guy's from, but this is post-Civil War, so I feel like it's just very relevant, and Hank doesn't necessarily disagree that they're asking for a fair price, but at the same time, you know, he just kind of blows it off as, like, bro, just take what you can get, because it's going to happen whether you like it or not.
Right.
Which is probably what he's saying to everyone, but yeah, and I think you're probably right. You could basically make a whole episode about just that, and so that, and that was not the story they were telling in this episode, but I feel like it's a significant issue that we definitely don't want them to shy away from, because it's important.
Yeah. At the homestead, Sully is trying to, he's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get up and go get some wood. And she's like, sorry, your doctor doesn't think you're ready yet.
Yeah.
Which I really like, because I just think it's funny having, like, yeah, your doctor, like, in your family. She can basically see everything he does. Because, you know, as a healthcare provider, you can tell your patients lots of things, but you don't go home with them and see what they actually do. So I think it's kind of funny that she, unfortunately for him, she's there for everything. So she can kind of dictate more, but Brian says, you're so lucky, you know, that we have a doctor for a ma, and Sully's like, you're really lucky, which I think is really kind, and shows that he is appreciative for this whole situation. It doesn't go without saying that he is appreciative.
I agree with everything you just said.
Thanks. He also is asked by Brian to finish the running ghost story, in which he explains that cloud dancing, actually, in the winter of 60 or something like that.
Yeah, in the winter of 60, 1860. That's when we've been setting this.
Yeah. I just think it's funny that he, like, remember, he, you know, it's significant for cloud dancing, significant for him. But he tells this, you know, very beautifully told story about how cloud dancing saw this white buffalo with coal red eyes.
And the buffalo saved the entire buffalo herd and cloud dancing from falling through the ice.
Falling through the ice, yes.
And this is, I wrote down here as well, the music. I don't know, the soundtrack of this episode, I thought the music at this part was really stunning.
I should have took more notice.
Well, like I said, this has been the first episode for me where I feel like it's really stood out. In the town, Birch is selling to more people out of the saloon. And who comes to town but Tate Rankin? And he recognizes Mr. Birch. And they have this very elusive conversation about, oh, I thought you gave this up back in Salinas, which is a city in California.
California.
Did you know that? I didn't
know. I did. I have some missionary friends from here that are from Salinas.
Okay. Rankin says, oh, I thought you gave up this line of work. And Birch is like, oh, no, I'm still doing the same thing. And Rankin's like, well, tell you what, I'll keep my mouth shut if you give me a cut. Which immediately, you know, if we weren't suspicious of Birch already, now we're like, a cut? But I thought you're working for the railroad. And Birch is like, great idea, let's talk about it somewhere more private. And at the homestead, Sully is standing, and the ultimate sign that Sully is back to his almost normal self, throwing a tomahawk with deadly accuracy. Yep.
See, you think that, and then I'm like, why is he doing that? Like, why is that the thing that he's, like, yeah, it's important to him. But I thought more like, oh, he's getting ready to, like, make sure that he can hurt someone and hurt them well, which I think is part of
it. Yeah, no, I mean, it's probably... You're right. It's definitely checking in. Can I still do what I need to do? Or what did he say earlier? Like, I got stuff I got plans
to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I do think it's also part of, like, him returning to normal.
Right. In the clinic, Dr. Mike actually notices Rankin and Birch across the street. And she goes over, and Rankin's a freaking creep and makes us like him less than we already do. But she's actually there because she wants to talk to Birch, but she's introduced to Rankin, only to find out who he is, that he's Tate Rankin, realizes that he's the one that tried to kill Sully, chews him out, which I'm like, yes, you do that, girl.
She doesn't even hesitate. As soon as she learns who he is, she's like, you're the one who almost killed Sully. And I'm like, girl, what part of almost killed someone doesn't make you think, maybe I should avoid this person? Am I a coward? Maybe I'm a coward, but I'm like... This man almost killed someone. Run.
I didn't think that till later when Sully's like, well, he knows now or whatever. Because I would have been like, if I realized who it was too. But I mean, she basically, she goes on this rant like, I'm going to get you arrested. I'm going to get you tried for attempted murder. And then after she walks away, Rankin's like, okay, well, I need to finish what I started. And so at the homestead, we see that Sully's like, I can't stay anymore. I have to leave. Thank you for everything you've done for me, but I have to take care of Rankin before he takes care of me.
He does say he's also worried about war. He's worried the Cheyenne are getting so angry that he's worried that they're going to start a war. And he's worried that if the Cheyenne, you know, leave the reservation, then the government is going to have the right to basically wipe them out. Matthew reveals to us that a Buffalo Skinner has been watching the house, which is
pretty scary.
But then they have like this very dramatic, if you kill him, then I don't know who you are anymore. I like what she says, like, if you kill him, you're no better than him, which I feel like, yes. But then the, I don't know who you are anymore if you kill him. And if you kill him, I never want to see you again. But at the same time, when she says, if you kill him, you're no better than him. I don't know if that's totally true. Because technically, couldn't it be qualified as self-defense? Like, they almost killed him. I mean, they basically thought they killed him before.
In the moment, but not when he's going back in, like, a revengeful manner to kill someone. That's not
sure. I mean, but I'm just saying,
they probably will fight back.
But it's not just, I don't mean in defense of himself. I mean in defense of the Cheyenne.
Yeah.
And that's the thing where I think maybe Sully's motivations are a little wobbly. Like,
well, I think that's the thing, right? They're never actually cut and dry, here are Sully's motivations. So we're left to wonder, is he angry about the fact that he almost got killed? Like,
right.
Is that where it's coming from? Is it anger about, like, what... He's heard about, you know, the fact that more Cheyenne have died, more Buffalo are being killed. Is he, like, I think that's never actually spelled out for us. So there's a lot of assumptions on our part about, like, where is this coming from? Because he's not an angry person in general, but he seems very, like, vengeful and angry in this situation.
Right. Exactly. And any of those reasons are valid reasons, right? Like, not that we want Sully to be angry or vengeful, but any of that, like, it could be, because he got hurt so badly, and, you know, we don't know. He's at least been recovering more than 2 weeks, right? Because even after the better than months. 2 weeks ago, like, more things have happened.
It would take time,
but and so that's where too, like, what have the Cheyenne been doing? And what, you know, how many more buffalo have they killed so far? Is it about the buffalo? Is he kind of saying, like, you're not leaving anything for the Cheyenne are going to starve to death. If we don't stop them, these people are going to die. And, you know, I flash back to the pilot where he talked to Dr. Mike. Remember my favorite scene in the pilot was Sully talking to Dr. Mike about the wolves and when the U.S. government put a bounty out on wolves and how he said what's happening to the Cheyenne is what happened to the wolves, where they were slowly killed out until there were next to none left and there was nothing anyone could do about it by the time we realized that they were almost all gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the point where she's saying, like, if this is about you, mm-hmm. and you kill him because of, like, you, maybe not you, but your own pride or just disdain, like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
But, and also recognizing that she's the type of person who wants to do this, which we'll see in the very next scene, but wants to do this the lawful way.
Yeah. I think for me, like, watching it, I had that similar sentiment that I had earlier of, like, she knows him very well, actually. And so she knows that's not who he is. I mean, think about it. We've never seen... Sully's beat some people up, but he's never killed anyone, nor do we think he ever would. So I think for her, it's disappointing because she's seen him go through emotionally, physically, this, like, healing process, but she probably doesn't feel like a lot of emotional healing has happened if this is where he's at.
Well, and to be honest, she's probably also scared because more or less this could be a suicide mission because he's not all better.
No. Yeah.
Like, he can barely get on that horse. Matthew has to help him.
Right. Which is probably why we see her do something later. But before we get there, we're in town. You kind of were alluding to the fact that Dr. Mike has sent a telegram. It is to...
the president of the railroad in Chicago. Right. Well... mm-hmm. Well, actually, so this is another time fail. They probably shouldn't have had Sully leave yet, because how long does it take him to ride over to the other guy's camp? But Horace bumps into her and says, "What do you know about stocks?" And she's like, "Well, what do you want to know?" And he's like, "Well, instead of giving me money for the building, they're going to give me stocks in the railroad." And she's like, "Actually, that's pretty normal." Which part of me is like, how does she know this? Because we already had the bank guy. Because
she's educated.
Maybe, but I also feel like this is a time when women didn't often own land or anything, right? And because remember, the bank guy didn't even want to talk to her. He was like, if you have a husband, I can talk to him. But anyway, then he says, well, here's the thing. Good old Horace, who reads often, is like, there's a different name than the railroad of the one that's coming. And then he also... reveals that Hank totally twisted his arm into agreeing at all by saying, oh, if you don't sell, then I will sell Myra to someone in San Francisco. Which, again, I feel like this is, like, a huge, horrible thing that we just kind of glide over. Like, not just, and I'm not saying, like, oh, it's horrible for Horace. I'm like, for Myra, like,
yeah.
Like, she's a piece of property, you know. Anyway, but, and then in the very, I guess they send a telegram right away because it seems like maybe the same day or not the same day, which if it's not the same day, Sully's been riding for a long time.
But I think maybe it took him a while to get there.
Maybe he had to prepare, but yeah, like I almost feel like maybe she should have had her meet Rankin after this all happened and then have Sully leave or whatever, but. Yeah, they go to the saloon, and they confront Mr. Birch. He doesn't work for the railroad.
He tricked them all. He's a con man.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they want all their deeds back, and if he doesn't give them back, she's gonna prosecute them for fraud.
Or Hank and Lauren are gonna tar and feather him.
Oh, yeah. Interestingly enough, I couldn't find a huge amount of information on this kind of, like, railroad fraud. That's not true. It's not that I couldn't find. There was a lot of information, and I didn't want to overdo it. But what one thing in my reading about selling false railroad stocks and certificates, something that I found was Cornelius Vanderbilt, who made his fortune, like, through the railroad and who we know just from the history of kind of the area that we live. But he... is one of the most famous people to, in 1866, lose $7 million to a false railroad stocks thing. But that was, like, up north, but I was just like, that's a lot of money to lose in the 1800s. Oh, I mean,
it's a lot of money now. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's what I meant, but I just thought that was noteworthy, because this guy came, obviously, to this, like, little backwoods town thinking that no one would know enough or ask enough questions or have enough connections, which, that comes up. Dr. Mike is like, oh, I have a lawyer friend who, you know... she has the connections to be like, if you choose to move forward with this, then we're gonna take you for all your worth, if not more. Right. But it happened not only to people who didn't know better, but it also happened to very wealthy people who had a lot more to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. We then see Dr. Mike looking kind of forlorn. And you can tell she's...
Good word.
She's thinking about Sully out there. And so she rides out to the reservation and she tells Black Kettle and Cloud Dancing, you know, Sully's going after Rankin and somebody has to stop him. But Cloud Dancing brings up the fact that this is Sully's fight, and if anybody wants to stop him, you need to find him, because you are the only one he'll actually listen to, which is quite the compliment.
It is a compliment. Do you think it's true, though? I feel like he listens to Cloud Dancing.
I'm sure he does, but, like, Cloud Dancing is, like, what, his best friend? And you know how the best friend, like, they can give you lots of advice, but they probably know who you really... He probably sees... I don't know. I think it's one of those best friend... gives you advice all the time. Best friend also sees girl you like give advice and how you take her advice off, like, more. I don't know. I think it's one of those situations where he probably is like, you actually might not know this, but he listens to you more than he listens to anyone else.
I will say, personally, I wish that they didn't include the part where the Cheyenne are like, oh, this is Sully's fight now. I wish they had just started with Black Kettle's comment, which is, we're not allowed to leave the reservation. We can't help. Because I feel like that's a better motivator for Dr. Mike to go alone than them just being like, oh, Sully's got to deal with this fight. Because Sully would never do that to them. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If they were facing, you know, someone who had tried to kill them, Sully wouldn't for a second be like, oh, it's his fight. And so that's just, like, a writing quip that I'm like, just stick with the, we're on the verge of war right now. If any one of us leave, it could be seen as an act of war. We can't leave. You have to do it. Because then I feel like then you get the same conclusion, but you don't have the awkward, like, oh, he's got to handle this fight. Like, the man almost died.
Yeah.
He's not thinking straight.
No, that's true.
But they do say that they will pray for him. And I marked again in this scene transition that the music, that, you know, they have some singing, dancing, they have mixed with the shot of
like a drum circle. Yeah, like a drum circle. There's a ceremony. There's a buffalo running. It's kind of another montage, but there's a lot mixed in there.
And I just marked that I really liked the music in this whole scene transition. I wish that we had a Larry Sellers in our podcast life. And what I mean by that is a Native American friend who maybe could give us more cultural, tribal insight. Just because I feel like this show is not a show to tread lightly around the Native American customs. And I feel like they've talked about so much already, from the running ghost myth in this episode to when we talked about the Sun Dance with the Great American Medicine Show episode. The reason is I just looked up Black Kettle. Actually, half of his face is painted red. I included it in our resources and research link for this episode, but I just looked up what red paint and red, the color, like what it symbolizes to Native American tribes. And I recognize that not all tribes are the same. I couldn't find any Cheyenne specific symbols for the colors and the face paint, but some more general Native American symbolism. I found that spiritual life is represented by the color red. And some symbols for red could be wounds, the sunset, thunder, blood, earth, war, day. Like I said, I am in no way a Native expert. I only know what I can find on the internet, but I always want to honor that these tribes are real tribes with culture, customs, and values that we don't understand, and if we're only seeing it through the lens of the TV, we probably are not appreciating it for its fullness. So I always want to try and be respectful and see what I can learn and just educate myself as well as our listeners on.
Right. Nice.
They then filter the shot of the white buffalo, which is not really a white buffalo. It's like it's a filtered buffalo.
Yeah.
Over the image of Sully riding, which is where I'm like, dude, has this guy been riding for 2 days? This is I'm headcanoning here. I like to headcanon. Maybe the buffalo hunters move their camp every day, and so he has to find them.
Well, I was thinking, I mean, they have to follow the buffalo, so if the buffalo are not going to just stand in the same...
But if they follow the buffalo, that would be easier. It's easy to follow a herd.
Well, there's no real indication of distance either, so...
That's true.
Yeah. Like you said, Sully's riding, and there's a lot going on, because we see Rankin getting ready to shoot the buffalo, and then we hear Dr. Mike hear a shot. Then we see Sully creeping up kind of on the buffalo hunter's camp, and he beats two of them up at the camp.
Joe Lando has crazy eyes in this scene, and I don't mean that in, like, a nice way. I mean, like, he looks insane.
In what way is that? Could that ever be taken nice? Oh, I guess like crazy cool eyes.
Crazy gorgeous.
Okay, well, who are you telling they have crazy eyes? I'd like to know. Yeah, he's on a mission because then we see him riding towards Rankin. Rankin sees Sully, goes to shoot Sully, but then like there's this like weird morphing into running ghost. There's this white buffalo. And it almost looks like it's a hallucination or something, right? Yeah. Where you're like... Mm-hmm. What's going on? But next thing he knows, Sully's right in front of him. Sully hits him. They are fighting. They're tussling. I'm like, how much physical therapy did you go through to prepare you for this?
Throws a knife at him.
Yeah.
And Sully takes his tomahawk.
Mm-hmm. You think you've gotten pinned down and he's about to put an axe in his face. The axe lands next to Rankin's face, but it actually nicks his ear. So, you know, it's not totally harmless. But he tells Rankin, just quite the threat. What face was that?
Get out of here! Get out of my town!
No, that is not what he says. This is not a John Wayne Western. He says, if I ever see you
again... Town ain't big enough.
Oh my gosh. He says, if I ever see you again, I will kill you. And you know what? I actually believed him when he said that.
Crazy.
No.
And then he walks away like a dummy. Like this man hasn't already attacked him once from behind.
That's true, though. That is true. He has done that because he walks away and Rankin actually goes to shoot him. Before he can shoot him,
he gets impaled by ghost buffalo.
Why can't you make it sound cooler than that?
True Western justice.
Running Ghost returns, and yes, he kills Rankin without a trace, though. There's no trace of him afterwards. There's kind of like smoke.
There's no trace of the buffalo, but you notice the body has two horn punctures in the stomach.
Oh, no, for sure, but that's my point. There's no real evidence that Running Ghost has been there other than that.
When I think about the cultural meaning of Running Ghost and that it's a prayer being answered, I think there's a couple way you could play into it. Is Running Ghost protecting Sully because Sully was protecting the interests of the Cheyenne? Is Running Ghost an answer to the Cheyenne's prayers? Is Running Ghost an answer to Dr. Mike or Sully himself's intentions and prayers? And or you know, maybe Running Ghost is just avenging his buffalo brothers who have been killed, you know, for no reason, because we know that the Cheyenne believe you thank a life when you take it. Healing where that was,
yeah,
we don't snuff out life for no reason, and that's exactly what Rankin was doing. It does feel... Rankin has to die, right? Like, story-wise. Because there's no way this man is being paid by the government. Or, not by the government. He's being paid by the railroad to kill Buffalo. So, he can't really just walk away. So, there really isn't any other story arc for him than he has to die. And, you know, we've talked about Sully's not a murderer. He's not a cold-blooded killer. And even in as much as we wish that we understood about what Sully was exactly fighting for, was it for himself or was it for the Cheyenne or was it for the bigger reflections on the whole environment, it feels more just for him, for Rankin to die by Buffalo. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those storylines that I love that could be up for interpretation. And it's interesting because Sully makes the choice not to kill Rankin.
Right.
And to walk away, regardless of what Rankin chooses to do, recognizing it's not his responsibility to kill Rankin. Maybe responsibility is the wrong word, but like not his place to kill. He's not a killer, and hope that the whole reason he is doing it is to give life to the Cheyenne, the Buffalo, whomever.
And so Sully does ride off, even though he's injured. And sure enough, just about the time that Dr. Mike finds him, and he... I can't tell if I really liked it or it really bothered me, where he kind of, like, slumps off the horse like he sees her, and then he just suddenly, like, his legs maybe are like, let's stop working again, because he slumps off.
You know what, though? I feel like I understand it a little bit, and I'm going to explain it in a weird way, but whenever I would fly back to China from America, you would fly from whatever city in the U.S. to, I would always go either to like Detroit or D.C. And then I would have a flight to Beijing. And then I would have Beijing to Qingdao, which is the city I lived in China. And I would be stressed out on the U.S. flight. And I would be stressed out on, not super stressed out, but, you know, anxious about making the next flight and then the flight to Beijing. And as soon as I would get on the flight from Beijing to Qingdao, I would pass out. And we're talking, you know, this is like a 26-hour journey. I would pass out on that last flight. And it was always because I was so relieved. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be fine. Like, once I get to Qingdao, I have people there. I know how to get around. I know where I am. I can talk to the taxi drivers. And so I wonder if, like, seeing Dr. Mike kind of feels like that for Sully. Like, this whole, you know, he was battling for his life. He was battling for, you know, to protect his friends. And seeing her, knowing it's over, Rankin is dead, he's not going to kill any more Cheyenne, he's not going to kill any more Buffalo, he's not going to hurt Sully ever again, right? Because we know that he was planning on it. Maybe it's just the relief of, like, all the strength leaves his body and he just passes out off the horse.
No, I think it is. I think he probably was very injured. I mean, he still got rustled around quite a bit. And yeah, I'm pretty sure every break I've had from school ever, I always get sick. And it's that idea that you tell your body, like, no, 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 you can't get sick or you can't feel the effects. And then when you finally can, your immune system's like, okay. It is funny that you said that because I thought of the same thing of, like, that's when I'm like, I can't tell if I liked it or I didn't like it, because I understood where he had this, like, release moment of, like, okay. Or I couldn't determine if it was weird. Just the way it happens is kind of funny, but...
I do think it's a little cheesy when she, like, catches him and he, like, rolls into her arms.
Why? I like that. I like that. Because then she, like, goes to him.
It's cheesy.
And Sully's like, it's over, you know. And she's like, did you kill him? He's like, I didn't. Even though it takes him a second to get it out and everybody's like, just tell her you didn't. And she's relieved. You can tell she's super relieved. And yeah, his head is in her lap. And...
I mean, I'm waiting for the part where he's like, I didn't kill him, but he is dead. And she goes, what?
I liked the ending. I liked how it ended just like that instead of, like, any other things that needed to happen.
It's interesting, though, too, because Cloud Dancing tells her that she's the only one who can convince him. But in the end, I guess, technically, she'd already convinced him.
Yeah, because he never actually says when he never actually says that he's gonna kill him. Like, he never said that. It's intended, but he never says.
He insinuates.
Okay, yes, but he never says, I'm going to murder him. So...
But then that makes her whole speech seem a little overdramatic.
I know,
that was never his intention.
But maybe that's why they had this whole buildup of, like, him taking a while to get there and everything, because maybe he didn't really know what he was gonna do until he was face-to-face with Rankin.
Then what I would argue is maybe we need that one more scene... And there wouldn't even have to be talking. We'd just have a scene of, like, Sully made a campfire and he's staring intently into the campfire, processing what he's gonna do when he faces Rankin, to A, show us how we can have the time to send a telegram all the way to Chicago and figure out that Birch is false, and then Sully to not arrive till later, even though he left earlier. And then we also know, like, okay, he's been thinking about what she said, what he's gonna do, so that, yeah, when he gets there, we still don't know what he's gonna do, but we know he's thought about it, you know? Like, maybe if there was, like, one more scene in there of him processing.
Interesting. I see what you're saying. So, favorite scene?
I think I like when they're at the hot springs and the
Cooper... you just picked mine.
The Cooper kids are being super encouraging and like, you can do it, Sully, you're doing great.
You literally just picked mine. Yeah, I like that scene too. I like them being all together and encouraging, and Sully's trying, and yeah, I agree. Can we have the same favorite scene?
No.
I was like, I'm pretty sure you told me no at one point earlier.
I try to never choose the same one as you.
Okay, well, since I was nice and let you go first, let me think of another one.
Actually, but usually you're not ready, and then you always tell me to go first. So I went first. I didn't even ask.
I've been caught. That's true. Too bad it's been recorded and everyone else can agree, attest to that. Yeah, I normally can't think. I guess, like, then I would probably pick the end, just because I think the end is real cute. The whole Sully Mike thing. But I also think, you know, how they bring the running ghost circle full, the running ghost story full circle. Mm-hmm. And Sully makes a choice not to kill. I guess I'd probably pick that.
Yeah.
Okay. Ranking. See, now you understand ranking.
Ranking.
Ranking. This is what I was thinking when we said ranking.
Ranking. The ranking. Rank king.
Okay, stop. So.
Well, what do you think? Let's, like, just talk, like, higher end, lower end, in the middle.
Thinking probably higher to mid.
Okay.
I liked it. You liked it, right?
Yeah. If we're looking at number 4, that's Great American Medicine Show. 3, The Visitor. 1, Badwater Pilot is number 2.
Is it better than The Great American Medicine Show?
I feel like the thing about The Great American Medicine Show, though, is that one was so powerful on an emotional level. This one's not super emotional. I think this storyline is very clean. Like you said, it wraps itself up very well.
I mean, I think I would probably put it either right above that or right below that.
I think the performances are stronger in The Great American Medicine Show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the acting. Not that it was bad in this one, just that I think Great American Medicine Show has some really stellar performances.
So now you'd be saying, is it better or worse than Law of the Land then?
I think I had some moral issues with Law of the Land, so I would say it's definitely better than Law of the Land.
Okay, so did you just answer
the new number 5?
I am comfortable with that.
Okay, so we have, this is the new number 5, right below it, Law of the Land, right above it, The Great American Medicine Show. Which is kind of ironic, because Law of the Land was the first episode that James Keach directed. So they're right next to each other at the moment.
There you go.
Cool. Thank you for sticking with us today, guys. Please tell us what lessons you think characters learned. I think there are all sorts of lessons that could be pulled from this episode. You can submit those lessons anywhere you can find Not a Lady online, on our website, notaladypodcast.weebly.com, or on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Not a Lady Podcast, or shoot us an email. notaladypodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from you guys, and we really love to get your voices in the show and hear your thoughts and reflections, because we believe that TV shows are for more than entertainment, and so we want to gain lessons to live better lives and be better people.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Literally. Too funny. All right, guys, we'll see you next episode, which is
The Prisoner. Dun, dun, dun. If you like this episode of Not a Lady, you can support us by sharing any of our content on social media and giving us a review on your favorite podcast streaming service. We look forward to talking to you guys in the next one.
See ya!